This is Bigger Than the Game with Dermy Dove and Jose Ruiz.
All right, welcome to Bigger Than the Game with Dermy and Jose. I'm Dermy Dove, and I'm joined by the man, the myth, the legend, my tag team partner, Mr. Jose Ruiz. What's going on, man?
How you doing, man?
That's good, man. I'm doing great. And, you know, our last episode was about the late, great Jerome Brown. And, you know, you and I were talking, and we thought there's us being from Philly, Eagles fans, and we thought there's no one better to have on the show or ask to come on the show than the legendary voice of the Eagles himself, Mr. Merrill Reese.
Hi, guys. How are you?
We're great, Merrill. Again, like we mentioned early on, man, we really, really appreciate you jumping on with us and giving us a couple of minutes of your time to talk about this late, great.
Sure. I remember Jerome well. If Jerome was in your life at some point, you would never forget him. You would never forget him. He was an unusual player, and he was certainly an unusual man.
No, well, Merrill, I guess I want to start there. Do you remember the first time you met Jerome?
Not specifically. I mean, I can remember him coming to Philadelphia. I can remember him coming with a lot of fanfare because everybody, he was a larger-than-life personality while he was still at the University of Miami. I remember before a bowl game, he marched into a media conference wearing fatigues as if he were going to storm the beaches. But that I remember. I remember when Buddy Ryan drafted him and what a great draft pick that was. But the actual first meeting, I don't remember.
Nice. Yeah, so what was your, Merrill, I'm trying to think too, like, because I can remember I was a young kid when Jerome Brown was on the Eagles, and I do remember that personality and everything, but for you, what was like your first moment where you were like, wow, like this guy is going to be
Can't look at a guy and say he's going to be a special player based on training camp or based on anything but action. But I remember from the very, very beginning when the season began, there were no nerves. There was no adjustment period. He went right out there and lined up at his defensive tackle position and had an impact on the game. I mean, every player goes through some growing pains, but Jerome Brown arrived NFL ready.
Oof, that's awesome. That's good to hear.
Now, when he joins that D-line, there's Jerome, there's obviously Reggie White, Clyde Simmons, and when you talk about that D-line of that Buddy Ryan era Philadelphia Eagles, Merrill, do you think that D-line gets talked about enough as far as one of the great defensive lines in NFL history?
Well, they had a nickname, kind of. I mean, somebody called them Gang Green, but it never really stuck. They didn't have the kind of nickname as the Doomsday Defense or the Fearless Foursome or the Purple People, but they had a great, great defense. And they were a defense with great players. I mean, when you talk about Reggie White and you talk about Jerome Brown, and they are two of the best at their position ever. And then you add other people like Clyde Simmons. He was outstanding. And remember, the other guys who came in rotations were Mike Pitts and Mike Golick. So this was an exceptional defensive line, one of the best ever.
Yeah, no, we both agree with that for sure, Merrill. And then I guess I have a follow-up question to that. And it's like, you know, we mentioned all these great defensive players on that defense in general, especially the defensive line. We talked about Buddy Ryan. We all know about Randall Cunningham and obviously what was on offense. But why do you think, Merrill, like this team, I mean, they won a lot of regular season games, but they didn't have that playoff success that we all wanted, right, as Eagles fans. Why do you think that,
well,
that was?
Well, they were a very, very good team, but they were never complete. They lacked an offense that can pick them up. You had Randall Cunningham, who's one of the most exciting quarterbacks ever. Right. But The offensive line, I think, was the weakness of that team. I thought that the offensive line was slightly below average, and there were a lot of injuries, and there were guys who were in and guys who were out. You look at this Eagles team right now, heading into the 2022 season, and we can look at the lineup. We can talk about on paper. They are one of the best, if not the best, offensive line in the National Football League. And I think that is what the Buddy Eagles lacked.
I agree with that. I think if they would have focused on that offensive line and given Randall protection, I think that it could have gone into some deep playoff runs for that team.
Well, and there's one other thing. Randall, you guys are certainly too young to remember, but Randall's initial quarterback coach was a man by the name of Doug Scovell. And Doug Scovell was a great, great student of the game, one of the best quarterback coaches in the NFL. And he had Randall really preparing for games. He had him on the right page. And then tragically, Doug died when he had a heart attack while working out at the vet on a Saturday morning in the exercise room. He had a sudden heart attack. And it was like Randall lost a parent. That's how close they were. And there was never anybody who came in and took control of Randall's game the way Doug Scovell did and made Randall answer all the right questions, make sure he was totally prepared. Other people occupied that job, but they never had the same effect on Randall. And if you look at Randall, when else in his career did he have that great kind of year? The answer was when he played for the Vikings. And who was his offensive coordinator then?
Brian Billick.
Another great guy who could take command of that game. So I think that had a lot to do with it, the death of Doug Scovell.
No. I always kind of wonder, because you look at when Buddy was in Chicago and, you know, Mike Ditka ran the offense, but they had a strong defensive, you know, coach there to help run that Bears defense, and they won Super Bowl 20. Do you think that they focused on, after Doug passed away, getting that right offensive coach in here, or they did not focus enough on getting that true offensive coordinator who could really help develop Randall in the offense?
Well, I think that's a good part of it. I thought that Ted Plum, who was became the next offensive coordinator, Ted was fine, but there was nothing exceptional. I don't think he ever had the same communication channel with Randall that Doug did. I think that was a big part of it.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense, Merle. And we're obviously talking about now like the Buddy era, right? And you know, we talked about why they couldn't win more and things like that. But me and Jeremy were talking about this before we jumped on, and it's like, you know, that Buddy era, like, fans still talk about that team, and they're revered and they're loved in the city. And again, for not having the, you know, that playoff success, why do you think that team in that era?
Well, because
is so
they were characters. Because they were people that the fans just absolutely loved, including Buddy. I mean, Buddy was a character. Right. Buddy was a great defensive coach. Make no mistake about that. But he said whatever was on his mind. He didn't care. He didn't worry about the owner. He didn't care what anybody thought. Whatever Buddy thought came out of his mouth. And that didn't sit well with a lot of people in the front office. But Buddy was a character. But Buddy was a great, great coach. A great coach, primarily with the defensive guys. They loved him. The offensive guys had some differences. If you look at, I still feel that Buddy did not build, as I said, that offensive line the way it needed to be built. But I think that Buddy had as a defensive coach, he was one of the best they've ever been around. And that's why it's always been my opinion, as we get set this in August to go into another year where they have the Hall of Fame and Dick Vermeil will deservingly be put into that Hall of Fame. But I still believe that there should be a place in the Hall of Fame for great coordinators on both sides of the ball. I mean, we have great head coaches. We have great players. We have some people in there like Dick LeBeau, who was in there for the combination of being a great coordinator, but also being a great defensive back. But there is nobody in there, to my knowledge, who is there on the strength of being a great coordinator on either side of the ball. I'll give you a couple of defensive examples. Buddy Ryan deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, not as a head coach, but because of what he did for defenses. Don't forget, he was the guy who put together that great defense in Minnesota. He did the Jets defense for Weeb Eubank that won the had the big upset over the Baltimore Colts. The other guy who succeeded as the Eagles defensive coordinator when Buddy moved on and he worked under Rich Kotite was Bud Carson. Bud Carson deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. He is one of the most brilliant defensive coordinators ever. And you talked to me about Jerome a bit ago. It was Buddy Ryan who told me that you look at the sack totals of Reggie White, arguably one of the greatest defensive ends, if not the greatest defensive end to ever wear an NFL uniform, and Clyde Simmons. But he said Jerome Brown, in crushing that pocket, had as much to do with those numbers as anything because he teed it up for Reggie and Clyde. So, again, Buddy deserved a part in the Hall of Fame. Bud Carson deserved a place in the Hall of Fame. And I'll give you one other defensive genius who deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, and that is the late Jim Johnson. What a great coach he was for Andy Reid for all those years.
No, I agree, because I know in the Basketball Hall of Fame, there's, you know, Tex Winter got in, and he's, you know, a great assistant coach, and there's other assistant coach. And I think you're absolutely right in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, especially for guys like Buddy and a Bud Carson, Jim Johnson, who did legendary things. I think there definitely should be a place for them in the Hall of Fame. I couldn't agree more. Well, as someone who has been listening to you for so many years, my family's been listening to you, and I'm sorry if this is a tough question. It might be a hard one, but just wondering, is the Buddy Ryan era, would you say that's, like, at least so far, I know there's still more great football ahead for the Eagles, but is that so far, like, when you look back, your favorite era of calling, like, the Eagles?
No.
Or most exciting?
Most interesting and controversial, but you can't say that was any more exciting than watching a young coach come off the sidelines of being the Rose Bowl winning coach and taking over an Eagles team that was in dire straits and take them from nowhere and marching them into Super Bowl 15. What Dick Vermeil did was amazing in this city as a head coach. You really have to look at what Dick Vermeil did. Dick Vermeil, if you look in the dictionary and you look up at the word charisma, there's got to be a picture of Dick Vermeil because he was so charismatic. And don't forget, he took St. Louis to a Super Bowl championship, took the Eagles to a Super Bowl, took the Rams to a Super Bowl title, to a Lombardi trophy. So I'd have to say you start with Dick Vermeil. That was a great era. You look at Buddy Ryan. That was a great era, but it did not result in a Super Bowl. It was certainly one of the most unusual eras. You never knew what to expect next with Buddy. I mean, he was a lot of fun to be around. But then I would be remiss, even though it was a short era, if you could even call it an era, because it was only 4 years. But Doug Peterson, don't forget, Doug Peterson and his team won the only Lombardi trophy that sits at one NovaCare place. So that era will always have the most special place in my heart because it produced what we're all looking for, a championship.
Exactly. You know, we can take a lot from each of those eras, and we agree. And you're preaching to the choir with Jeremy. Jeremy's a huge Big Vermeil fan, and you know, we were just having a long conversation about Big Vermeil not too long ago. So
I'll say this real quick, Jose. I don't think it gets talked about enough, in my opinion. The turnaround job that Dick Vermeil did with the Eagles might be one of the most impressive jobs in NFL history. Like, for what he had to overcome.
You know, guys, he didn't have a number one draft pick for a couple of years.
Until 78, yeah.
He came in 75 and didn't have a number one draft pick till 78. Do you remember who his first number one draft pick was?
Yeah.
I should.
Ooh, 78.
I don't. I'm blanking.
Three-time All-American from UCLA. Yeah. Jerry Robinson.
Oh, you're putting me on the spot.
Jerry, okay.
Yeah. Okay.
That was a good one. Okay. That was good. That was good, Merrill. You got us on that one.
Yeah.
That was good. Oh, man. And the thing is, we were talking, like Jose said, we were just talking about Coach Vermeil. And I knew that for, honestly, Jose, I knew that for that conversation, but I blanked out just now.
Nah, great stuff, Mara. And again, like we live in an era now where we have to compare everybody to every person and every team to prior teams. So, you know, you hear a lot about like Aaron Donald now, you know, in the
and
league
he is.
And how great of a player he is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he definitely is. We talked about a lot of other defensive tackles who are, you know, have had great careers. Who would you look at, even it doesn't have to be recent, you know, it can be previous years, so you can compare a Jerome Brown to, for our listeners who maybe didn't get a chance to watch him play?
You know, I'm going to say
you stumped us.
Yeah, that's
stumped
true.
Us first.
I'll tell you what, right now, I'm going to tell you that I hope, this is a fervent hope, that after watching this coming season, that we are able to say that the closest thing to Jerome Brown is Jordan Davis.
Mm.
That's a wish.
Oh, that
would
be great.
But up until this point, as great a defensive tackle as Fletcher Cox was, you'd have to say from a talent standpoint, he'd be the closest. But he was different type of defensive tackle. I mean, Fletcher Cox was big and strong and all of that, but Jerome Brown was such a different presence out there, and personality-wise, Jerome was outlandish. I'll tell you guys a quick story. I used to do a radio show on Monday nights from the Bellevue. It was a restaurant bar. It was a delicatessen inside the Bellevue Stratford Hotel. And we would get in there, and we would do the show every week, and the player would often pick up a sandwich or something to go home. And Jerome Brown actually said to me, I'd like to do the show. It was called the Broadway Restaurant Bar at the Bellevue. Hmm. And I said, fine, when can you do it? Because usually the players will go out and bowl on Monday nights. So I said, how about next week? He said, okay, I'll do it. So I see Jerome on Monday. I said, Jerome, I'll see you tonight. He said, what do you mean tonight? I said, at the Broadway Restaurant Bar, you're doing my show. He said, no, it's our bowling night. I said, well, you said you would do the show. He said, okay, I promise I'll do the show. So we came and he did the show. And after the show, he goes over to the counter and he orders 4 corned beef sandwiches and 3 roast beef sandwiches. And I said, oh, you going back to watch Monday Night Football? He said, yeah. I said, so you're having a party? He said, no, Merle, these are for me. there's
a lot of
stories about Jerome. I could go on and on. So he was different.
Yeah, you know.
But I love him, you know. He and Reggie used to go at it all the time in that locker room. And Reggie would give him a tough time because Jerome's language was colorful, to say the least. And Reggie, being as religious as he was, didn't stand for any kind of cursing. And so he gave Jerome a tough time. And then when Reggie went out of the room, Jerome took Reggie's trousers and shirts and tied great big knots and knotted them around the post of the locker. And Reggie came in and couldn't get his clothes out. I mean, he was the biggest practical joker you ever met. But you know what? He also had the biggest heart. He was a wonderful person when you got to know him.
No, those are great stories that I never heard. I think that's so key, because people may look at Reggie and being so religious and a minister, and Jerome was an outlandish personality, and wonder how those two guys were so close. But I think you hit it, Merrill. Like, the heart of Jerome and the heart of Reggie, like, is why like those guys had that kind of brotherhood.
Give you another great Reggie. You want another great Jerome story?
Absolutely.
We're leaving for a preseason game. And the plane is supposed to take off on a Friday afternoon at 2 o'clock, which means that everybody's got to be at the airport at 1 and off to go. And we're sitting on the runway, and it's 1:45, and Jerome still isn't there. And now it's 10:50, and there's no Jerome. Now, Buddy always insisted that the players wear a tie and jacket. He said, we're going on a, when all of us had to wear ties and jackets, we're going on a business trip, and you dress for a business trip. And it's about 100 degrees out. It's August, and there's no Jerome. And all of a sudden, about 5 minutes before we're ready to take off, you hear a vibration, and it's Jerome with the speakers blaring, driving up Island Avenue in his Ford Bronco. He pulls into the parking lot, jumps out of the door, and races up to the plane. And I'm telling you, it is hot. And Jerome gets on the plane, and he is wearing his tie and his jacket and no shirt. and the sweat is pouring down his chest. But he had his tie and his jacket.
Oh. And those are probably the stories that's like he followed Buddy's rule. He did have a tie on.
He followed Buddy's rule.
He had a tie on.
It's the first person I ever saw wear a tie without a shirt.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I remember watching an interview with Mike Golick, and you know they were talking about Jerome's viewing and things like that in the funeral, and how all the players took off their ties and things like that and put them on the casket because. You know, Jerome didn't like wearing the tie normally, and so that's a great
Buddy,
story.
Buddy could be like tough. Buddy would go in the middle of the practice field and really light, really get into a player and just with a stream of profanity, reduce him to a quivering fool. But Buddy would go over to Jerome and he'd let Jerome have it. And Buddy and Jerome would just turn around and look at Buddy with the biggest smile and turn and give him a hug. That was Jerome. Jerome and Buddy, no two people loved each other more. There was no greater respect than what Buddy had for Jerome and vice versa.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. If I think of the quintessential Buddy Ryan player, it's Jerome Bryant.
Absolutely.
Like it just reckless and just dominant on the field and off the field too.
Did you guys know the National Football League has basically told players or teams to stop retiring numbers because they don't have enough numbers to go around if you keep retiring this one and that one and this one and that one, all those numbers, you can't retire them. So the year after Jerome died, they sent back, they had a day at the stadium to honor Jerome, and they brought in his family from Florida, and they brought some of the teammates out at halftime, and taking the microphone, I believe, was Seth Joyner, and Seth Joyner made a whole big speech about Jerome Brown, and he said, and I want to thank the Eagles for retiring number 99. Nobody will ever again wear number 99. And the Eagles, rather than had no plans to retire number 99. But at that point, what could you do? So they retired it.
Absolutely.
I'm glad they did too, but you know what? They also should have retired number 17.
Yes, I think so. I think Harold, no one should wear that number again. I was so so happy that Harold got that just due and when he got into the Hall of Fame. You know, so special.
Oh, absolutely.
So special, Harold, and just a special person too. For me, Merrill, my final question is, we've seen recently with the Hall of Fame with like Terrell Davis, you know, he had 7 years and got in. Tony Boselli is getting in, played 7 years. And I've kind of seen some places where there's talks that, you know, of a Jerome maybe can make a case for the Hall of Fame. And I wanted to know what you thought of, like, you know, Jerome had those 5 years, but, you know, he was a dominant player. Do you see a case for Jerome being inducted into the Hall of Fame one
day? Well, you know, certainly the Eagles Hall of Fame he is a part of. But to talk about the NFL Hall of Fame, you know, you'd have to really look at the numbers and everything else. 5 years is, I mean, even though he died tragically, 5 years is a little bit of a little bit slender in terms of the kind of career that gets people into the Hall of Fame. I mean, I can tell you somebody else, if he had more years, he would be in the Hall of Fame. And because of an injury and his career ended after 10 years, he still didn't have enough to put him in the Hall of Fame. And that's one of my best friends in the world who sits next to me at every Eagles game, and that's Mike Quick. And he's not in the Hall of Fame. So I think it's tough to think that a five-year player could be in the Hall of Fame where here's a guy with 10 years and he can't get in.
Right.
That makes sense, for sure. And, and this will be my last question, Merrill, for sure. And, we obviously, Jerome was a huge part of, like, that Eagles team and, you know, that Buddy Ryan era. And, you know, so after his passing, me and Jeremy have had this conversation plenty of times on where we feel like that was when he passed, that was kind of like the end of that era, you know, because soon after that, Buddy's let go. He's not here anymore. Do you think that kind of like just shifted everything for that team, that era?
Well, I do think that had a big part of it when you lose one of your most impactful players and one of your most dominant personalities. It changes the chemistry of an entire team, along with the ability of an entire team, because he was that good. So thinking back, and you guys brought it up, I think you make a very, very good point that it did end an era. Yes.
Well, Merrill, I don't like to speak for anyone, but I'm sure Jose feels the same way. Not only do we thank you for the time that you have given us to talk about Jerome and Eagles history, but as someone who, you know, 35 years on this earth and all I've known is Merrill Reese, thank you for being just the incredible voice of the Eagles. And so many memories I have with family and friends involve you in this team. So just as an Eagle fan, thank you.
Well, thank you guys for having me, and keep up the good work. And it was a lot of fun speaking with you and recalling memories of one of the most colorful and most memorable sports personalities in the history of this city.
No, thank you, Merrill. And for the great Merrill Reese, for my tag team partner, Jose Ruiz, I'm Jeremy Dove. And thank you guys for watching and listening to Bigger Than the Game with Jeremy and Jose.